There's a lot going on in the LGBTQ community, and it affects all of us, whether you're comfortable with it or not. Are you struggling to reconcile a loved one's choices, preferences, and beliefs with yours? We're discussing as many of the LGBTQ lifestyle issues as we can on this edition of Frank Relationships.
Listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yeah. As always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. What are some of the difficulties that the LGBTQ community are facing that are unique to them these days? I'm going to throw that question to Father Joe. Father Joe?
Yes, good morning.
Weigh in.
Well, some of the... I'm pastor of a Catholic church in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the unique struggles of the LGBT community is whether the Catholic church would... does or would accept them in parishes and trying to find their place. So many Catholic gay and lesbian people seek for a church where they can just be a part of a church community like anybody else would want to be. And there are a couple of churches in the Baltimore area that are known as gay-friendly churches, but that's only about four or five churches, I think. So a few years ago, we started a gay and lesbian outreach group at our church. It's called LEAD, L-E-A-D, it stands for LGBT Educating and Affirming Diversity. So we use that as a vehicle through which gay and lesbian people can find their place in the church and just be what I might say is normal, ordinary Catholic parish parishioners and get involved in the life of the church.
Okay. And my stylist friend who's on the line, we're going to introduce him in just a moment. But what are some of the political and spiritual implications of the LGBTQ lifestyle?
Some of the spiritual indications are as they come together in a church community, some of them are couples in a relationship. Some of them are couples who want to be married because of their relationship. The Catholic Church is not allowed at the current time to do gay and lesbian weddings. And so many of the people who do get married by a minister of another denomination or the justice of the peace. But they still keep their membership as a part of the St. Matthew community. So that's somewhat of a political and spiritual struggle for them and for an individual parish church like our own.
Does anyone else want to weigh in on that?
I'd like to. My name is C.J. Jones. It's not just an issue in the Catholic community, but in churches in general. I am a member of, first of all, my company is Blue Diamond Entertainment. It is a quality events for mature women in the life. So I host events for lesbian women mostly. And as a Christian and a Baptist church, I am blessed to be a part of the Ministry of Love and Acceptance. In Atlanta, there are a few affirming churches, but it is still a struggle for the LGBT community to... practice religion and Christianity in peace. So I'm thankful that I am a member of a church because it is a problem. People want to worship and they are identifying as LGBT to be comfortable in a safe place to do so.
We've got a robust lineup to help to develop our understanding of all things LGBTQ. The first has been the head of the St. Matthew Catholic Church for over 25 years. And he's no stranger to grappling with the issues that trouble a community. 4 years ago, his church started a gay and lesbian outreach group known as LEAD. It provides a community of marginalized people that can support one another and discuss their relationship with the church. Through his work, it appears that the line between supporting the LGBTQ community and remaining loyal to the Catholic Church has been found by using one key concept. Maybe two, love and acceptance. To tell us all about it is Father Joe Muth Jr. We're also joined by the newly married same-sex couple and members of Father Joe's parish and benefactors of LEAD. They are Adrian and Marie. And we also have the stylist to the stars. With 23 years of experience and service to the hair care industry and a resume that includes styles that have graced the pages of Hair Color and Design and Modern Salon magazines, as well as decorated the MTV and Comedy Central networks. He's no stranger to the LGBTQ community because he's also a gay man. And he's here to share some of the challenges and victories that he's encountered along his journey. He is Mazay Jefferson. And rounding out our all-star cast is an events and party planner extraordinaire. Her niche market is what she terms mature women in the life. She had her first party when she was 5, and she's been partying ever since. And she's currently preparing for the largest Black Pride event in the country, if not the world, during this upcoming Labor Day weekend. She is CJ Jones. So,
hello, everyone.
If you want to learn how married life is going for the LGBTQers, how the community is dealing with the aftermath of the tragic events at the Pulse nightclub, and how you can gain a more compassionate perspective on the challenges that come with those who live this lifestyle, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team raises LGBTQ awareness on this edition of Frank Relationships. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
Before we get too deep into today's subject matter, I want to check in to see what's going on in the news. It's a short segment that we do that I'd like everybody to participate in. So guests, don't be bashful. We don't want to be the only ones running our mouth during the segment. And Father Joe, you may get plenty of times in the confessional with this topic. the first up is there's a Nancy tells me about the Steve Harvey's Summer Sex Challenge.
Okay. Let's just like cut the crap right now. You see how he prefaced that?
Yes.
I put it on you.
He said, Nancy,
I don't know anything about it other than
Nancy.
I don't know.
I don't want to say politically correct because Frank has politically correct challenges. He's challenged in that regard. But if he felt like truly in his shoes with it, he would just announce it.
I'm not in my shoes with it. I don't know anything about it.
Now he's clueless. Well, Nancy said.
Okay.
Yes.
Here are the stipulations.
Yes.
If you're in a new relationship, Steve Harvey is suggesting no sex for 90 days so that you get to know each other on a deeper level. And if you're married or in a long-term committed relationship, have sex every day for 90 days to brighten the spark in your relationship.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to toss this to the married folks on the line. Well, the two married people on the line, Adrian and Marie. What you got? What do you say about this?
They're not talking. Oh. And I would like to say Mazay is also married, so feel free, Mazay, to jump in.
Well, actually, I agree with it. I think sex is a big part of a relationship. It's not everything, but it is a big part because it brings that intimacy and that connection that, that I think if you're not having sex, you really don't have. As far as being single and not having sex for 90 days, I also agree with that. I'm kind of old-fashioned, and I've never been one just to want to jump into bed. I would like to get to know somebody, and my motto has always kind of been, I want someone that can stimulate my mind as well as everything else. You know, so that same feeling that I get when we're having sex, I want to have that when we're not having sex. So I think in that 90 days, that gives you time to really know somebody and feel like, is this a fit? And, just not give your body away to whoever comes along.
Does that have any, does your belief there have any religious reference? Is it connected to a religion at all, or is it simply just your belief?
What works for you?
I feel like it's really, well, a little bit of both. You know, being black, growing up in a black church, you're taught that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm not going to lie. As a young person, we all had our, you know, our wild days. Well, not everybody, but most of us have had our wild days. But as an adult, I really realized this isn't the life that I want to live. And especially being a gay man, I felt that we were always stereotyped that, you know, we just want to have sex and we have sex with everybody and anywhere. And I never felt that. That wasn't me. So I think that was part of it. I didn't want to live up to the stereotype. Two, for religious reasons. And three, just because, you know, my parents did good and brought me up right.
Nice.
Hey, what you got?
Actually, I think we're having like a little bit of click, click, click on the line. And Father Joe, you're the only person on the landline. So I think you're going to have to like be super still. And maybe...
be super still?
Yeah, I think it might be...
because of the question or because of the landline?
No, yeah, yes. Oh, no, I don't want you to be still because of the question. But we're getting like a little teeny bit of feedback, and I'm only suspicious because you're the only one on the landline that it could be you. It could be.
Okay.
But right. No worries. Jeff's not worried. We're not worried. So, but I want to interject that one of the reasons that I thought it was particularly cool to bring this in the news topic to this show is number one, sex, premarital sex, number one, I think is antique now in terms of challenging the church and faith traditions, because people, that's just where they are now. Nobody mm-hmm. even, there's been this resurgence of waiting until you get married. It's like the next new old thing is waiting until you get married mm-hmm. to have sex.
Yeah, there has been some of that. Yeah.
Yes, and I think that it's important that while a lot of people cast aspersions and they judge the LGBT community on a lot of different issues, and what I think that this premarital sex conversation, because ultimately that's what it is, when to have it, when not to have it, especially if you're just meeting somebody, it really highlights for me the places where we judge a community for the way they live, but we forget that we aren't exactly living biblical lives either. You know, and to me, yeah, and to me, this particular challenge highlights the fact that we've gotten so comfortable mm-hmm. with the
one
way
aspect.
We have, yeah, right. One aspect of the way we're not going to do what the book says do, or mm-hmm. at least what the teachings say mm-hmm. do. And yet, you know, we want to glare at somebody mm-hmm. else who's trying to live the best life they can live also.
I got to stress that I don't know what the book says.
It's quite all right. Most of the people that are living by it don't know what it says either.
One of the things that strikes me is a little odd is that, because I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher, and I work with young people.
You can tell us your name.
Sure. My name is Nakinji Cunningham. I work for DC Public Schools. I actually teach at Roosevelt Senior High School.
Okay.
And one of the things that contradicts, you know, this belief is that is the sex education that students get,
mm-hmm.
whether they want to or not.
Wow.
Whether their parents want them to or not.
Ah.
So the health department comes into the schools and teaches children how to have safe sex. In their presentation, there may be one slide on abstinence, and the remaining slides are about safe sex. And then they give them the tools before they leave to have safe sex.
Condoms.
Exactly. Condoms, dental dam, I learned a lot.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, you look at the faces of the students, and you're clear that some of them are clueless mm-hmm. about sex.
Yeah.
And so... to me, how are we preparing these up-and-coming adults, you know, to even take on this challenge? I think it's that we're contradicting what it is that we're doing by teaching them about it
right.
and then, you know, telling them to wait for
right,
90 days.
Right,
so that's
right.
It's a big contradiction.
So again,
there.
In the presentations, is anything talked about in terms of abstinence? Is that a consideration, or is it just the tools of having safe sex?
When I say there's like one slide out of 20 on abstinence, literally, there's one slide, and I've actually gone to the presenters and said, you realize you have one slide that says you can also abstain?
Yeah.
Everything else is just showing them, you know, the precautions.
They're pushing it.
Mm-hmm, sure.
They don't claim that. They claim that, you know, because the numbers are high with sexually transmitted diseases, they're preventing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, coming from that lens of abstaining as prevention, they really don't push
abstinence
that.
Abstinence considered only on a religious part of the question, or is it considered something that is necessary even in relationships of people that are not particularly religious?
Yeah, it has. There's no
separation
religious,
of church, yeah. Church and state. And there's not even a religious conversation going on.
No religious conversation.
Got it.
And do you have a suggestion on what you would like to see happen with your children?
I do, because I'm a teacher and I'm a mother of four. Mm-hmm. None of my children are having sex.
And for the record, she looks like 16. Somewhere she got four kids must be adoption.
But to make your mm-hmm. conversation, what yes. you just said, relevant, mm-hmm. how old are your children?
Right. So my
if
old
they're 30, that would
right.
be.
No. Yeah.
Problematic.
My oldest is 17.
Okay.
And she's just graduated from high school. So, you know, sex is something that we talk about quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And the one right under her is 14, and then there's a 12 and then a 10-year-old. So, you know, sex is definitely happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the conversation.
Right. Got
They're
it.
Even asking me about my first time, and I'm not sure I'm ready to even share, but...
How could you not share that with your 17-year-old?
It's coming.
Okay.
It's coming. It's going to come.
All right.
Yeah.
And I applaud her for even asking. Like,
right.
Wow.
Right.
My daughter, if she asked me that, I would be...
intimidated?
I'd be amazed.
Wow.
Right.
I would appreciate her asking that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the ways that we can start having these conversations about our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because our experiences, I mean, I'm proud of my experience with sex, where there were decisions I made that I, you know, at the time I wasn't very proud of. I'm always willing to share those things, and those are the things that we're forgetting to do, to share those real life experiences when it came to sex, those regrettable experiences and those that we really cherish. Instead, we put it in a box of, you know, what is right versus wrong. Well, no, this is my experience with mm-hmm. it. And I think that's one of the ways that we can actually, you know, help make these relationships healthy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to build. Yeah.
I'd like to chime in on that a little bit.
Please.
I went to Wilson High School in Washington, D.C.
What year did you come out?
45 years old.
We might have been in school together.
And I did go through that sex education class. I think the assumption with the schools is that the children are going to be exposed to it, whether they have the class or not. And I do not have any children, but I can kind of sort of put myself in that situation, wondering, is my child having sex? Are they thinking about it?
Mm-hmm.
I like to be on the other side and tell parents that you may not think they are, but a lot of times they are, or they're mm-hmm. thinking about it, and it just needs to be addressed.
Mm.
I did not have a sex conversation at all with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wasn't the best child as far as being educated sexually. In situations, I involved myself in situations that maybe I probably shouldn't have been involved in, as well as being afraid to get pregnant, because that was the sex education that I got.
Right.
Better not get pregnant.
Right.
I don't want to take care of a child.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a fear attached to mine, which is not necessarily the reason why a person should not have sex. They should be educated on the ramifications of having sex and possibly getting pregnant or infected with some type of disease, having sex. it's a very important conversation for children, and the best person to have it is your parent, even though it's a very uncomfortable subject, probably for the child and the parent. But I would encourage parents to go ahead and start the conversation.
Right.
And don't wait for your child to do it. And that's speaking from a child's perspective as an adult, not from a parent's perspective, because I'm not a parent. So.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you that love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create better parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. You can also find me on ABC's Good Morning Washington most Friday mornings during the 9 o'clock hour. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get each week's show. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Good morning, Frank.
The consummate generalist.
Indeed.
We're also joined by today's visiting guest co-host, Nakinji Cunningham. Greetings, Nakinji.
Greetings.
Well, I would ask you, who are you and what do you do? But you already jumped. Yes, we already know that. All right. Moving on.
He's a little slow on the uptake today. Go on.
As is the case this week with Nakinji, there's a visiting guest co-host chair available every week here in the studio. If you're here in the Washington, D.C. area or traveling to the D.C. area and want to join us in the studio on a given Thursday morning, email me at frank@franklove.com and let me know.
So, Frank, before we go any further, I just need to know something.
Kick it.
So, Nakinji, I don't know if you know, and it's only kind of leaked out to me recently, but Frank travels, like, a lot.
Okay.
A lot. So I'm on the brink of saying, where you been, Frank? And where you going?
Hey.
Okay.
Women love to ask.
That's nice. That's nice.
Where you been? Where you going?
And where you going?
You're getting a text right now from my wife.
Because she want to know, too.
She knows. Thank you.
Fact, awesome.
She actually rolls with me sometimes.
Awesome.
Last week, I was in New Hyde Park, New York. And last week, I was also in Germantown, Tennessee, which is right outside of Memphis.
Wow.
As soon as the show's finished recording today, I'm in Cleveland. And then next week, I'm going to Dallas.
Mm.
And
wow.
The following week, I'm going to some place like Harvey, Illinois.
Deep.
You ever heard of Harvey, Illinois?
I have not.
Never.
So
I have not.
Well, I'll be there.
You know, he gets to do all his traveling.
Frank
and what
is
do
in
I
the
do?
House.
Hammer away, getting the show done.
Thank you.
You know.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's right. Good response. Oh.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, well, you know. And if anybody wants me to come visit, you know, book club, church, whatever have you,
Nice.
Email me at frank@franklove.com. Thanks for setting that up, Nancy.
Oh, see, I try to like, yeah. And he always manages to make it work for himself. It's just killer. I'm telling you.
Oh, okay. All right. Father Joe, would you tell us about the evolution of you and your church as an advocate for the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, about 6 years ago, we were invited to a cookout, actually, at my brother's house. And there's an organization in the Washington area called New Ways Ministry. And they wanted to kind of talk, and they're a liaison group between the LGBT community and the Catholic Church. And they wanted to just kind of talk to people about their mission and what they're doing. And so we had a number of people from the church come to this gathering. And at the end of the gathering, somebody said, so what are we going to do? So the woman who asked that question, she's a woman in the parish. She has five children, and she has a gay son and a lesbian daughter. Mm. She said, we need to sit down and talk about this. So we started sitting down to talk about it, and eventually our group LEAD started out of that small little gathering of conversation. And so LEAD is made up of people that are gay, people that are lesbian, people that are couples, and parents of gay and lesbian children, and people referred to as allies who support gay and lesbian people on the issues. We've been meeting now once a month for about 5 years.
Nice.
Got any story of success? How are you received?
Well, when we started, it was during the initially around the same-sex marriage debate in the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
The LEAD group was very conscientious about going around to the other parish groups to say, this is who we are, this is why we're here, we want to be a part of the church like anybody else. And, you know, there were some conversations about, you know, people, whether they were going to accept them or not, but it was very forthright and open, and the conversations developed, and they're another parish group right now.
Hmm.
And it's been very accepted on the parish level, and I meet with the bishop on a regular basis to let him know what's going on, and he's been very gracious and accepting of this group and things like that. So we've had a number of interesting developments along those lines just to kind of help us grow and develop along these ways.
Nice. Ms. A,
The
June 26th marked the one-year anniversary of the passing of the Supreme Court's decision on gay marriage equality. Why did that... Are you married? Oh, no, you are married. Okay,
yeah.
Why did that matter so much?
Well, it mattered because gay people want to have the same rights and should have the same rights as everyone else, and not being able to visit your partner in the hospital, or if they die and you have a house or home together, it was very hard to legally keep this, because sometimes the family maybe didn't agree with the situation or agreed with it just because the two were, you know, both alive, but then once one of the partners passed, they might come and take the house away. I mean, this has happened to numerous friends of mine. And, you know, I mean, that wasn't the reason why I got married, but those are some of the key things. And you want someone that you can grow old with and spend your life with and have it recognized by everyone. And that was mainly one of the reasons why I got married. Just, you know it was the right person. I know this person I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, and I wanted the world to know that and have it be legally binding as well.
Another powerful date is June 28th, which is the 47th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And admittedly, up until a few days ago, I didn't know what the Stonewall riots were. I never heard of it. I guess call me ignorant or...
Unaware.
Yeah, well, whatever
cut you
want.
Slack.
Yeah. But
ignorant.
Oh man.
Okay. But see, Jeff
down
has a
over
different.
Here, you guys.
Jeff's got a different perspective. Mean, he's got a different like positioning because he's got history in New York. So I have
right.
no. I mean, I've
right.
just been to New York a million times, but I don't
Visiting.
Know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the landmarks in New York other than Central Park,
Times Square. So,
he needs to get back to the city.
So, yeah,
so much more there.
So why is it, maybe CJ? Well, CJ, why was that significant? Why was Stonewall significant?
Well, it was significant because a lot of people lost their lives to hatred.
A lot like what? A lot like
anytime
five?
Anytime that happens, whether it's gay or straight or religious reasons, it's a tragedy. So
mm-hmm.
Just to remember that occurrence is just remembering the people who were involved. Who
mm-hmm.
It was also the beginning of the gay liberation movement in a lot of ways in this country.
Mm. Right.
And it really gave people who were tired of being harassed by police and tired of being secretively going to places without being known, it gave them a chance to kind of step out and begin to say, you know, we are people too. We need to have our rights recognized. And people stood up to begin to say, we're not taking the harassment anymore. And
right.
the gay liberation movement was born out of that.
And can anybody weigh in on what happened? Because although I know something happened and President Obama named it a national landmark, I believe, I don't really know the story. So can somebody, anybody?
Well, I can tell you, not because I was there.
Okay.
However, because I know the way he likes to roll. So, but what I learned recently, actually, was that the police raids of places like Stonewall was common, and what made Stonewall uncommon, and correct me if I'm wrong, anyone on the line, was that it was one of the it may be the first time, documented first time, that the people fought back and
that's
said
right.
no more.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's right.
It's correct.
And there's a movie that I'm thinking about. I don't remember the name of it, but it was an Al Pacino movie. Somebody's got to remember the name of it. It was an Al Pacino movie where he was a police officer, and he was sent into the gay community. He was a
Was it Serpico?
No, that's another one. But that's one about police corruption. But this was an Al Pacino movie where he was sent into the gay community. He was a heterosexual, and to investigate something. But he ended up, at the end of the movie, he ended up becoming gay.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember the
he
name.
He was probably already gay.
Well, okay. All right.
That's a whole other show.
Right, right.
Frank.
Yes.
Frank, I would say that probably, I don't remember that particular movie, but he probably didn't become gay.
She
probably recognized that
he was gay,
out.
Right?
It's called Cruising.
Came out.
Cruising. That's
cruising.
Okay.
Wow.
1980.
Wow. All right. Interesting. And so, is anybody familiar with this movie other than, I guess, me?
On to the next question.
Wow.
familiar with the story.
Okay. Okay.
Interesting.
Okay. All right. I would love. I can't believe I know a movie.
Don't rest on your laurels, buddy.
Right. okay, but Father Joe, though the church's position has remained consistent over many, many years, to say the least. But how have you managed to create a line between the church and the LGBTQ community that's able to remain and sustain?
Well, I can say something about that, but then maybe Adrian and Maria want to say something about that because they've walked that line themselves.
Okay.
And,
but I've maintained the line by reaching out to gay and lesbian people myself and having them know that St. Matthew is a welcoming place, but also on, might say, on the other side, the hierarchy side, going down on a regular basis to talk to the bishop to let him know what we're doing, so that he doesn't get surprised or sandbagged or hear what's going on and have to call me in or something. So I just let him know up front, beforehand, you know, what we're doing. And he appreciates that as a different way of handling things rather than finding out, you might say, about what we're doing and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a fairly healthy relationship on both sides with the gay and lesbian community and with, I'd say, the bishop of the diocese. But Adrian and Maria might have something to say about that because they're the ones who have actually weathered the storm in their life and have are coming to terms with that in the parish community.
Nice.
Adrian, Maria, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of layers to our church, a lot of layers to our humanity, if you will. And the way Maria and I came to the church was... came back to the Catholic Church, if you will. We were kind of raised Catholic a little bit, but then came back really because there's this beautiful thing about the Catholic Church. It's called these Catholic social principles, Catholic social teaching. And the one thing that I really embrace from those is that everyone has their God-given dignity within themselves, and that if we have the ability to see our own dignity and then we get to see the dignity of everybody else, and then we are really truly living the gospel. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we believe, and we believe... that our church has the opportunity to model that for other communities as well. And that's how we try to live our life, you know, going down the street, going into church, going into work. It really is that everybody has this beautiful part of them that we really want to dig to see.
Mm-hmm. And how has the face of advocacy changed over the years for individuals like yourselves? So, Father Joe, how has it changed over the years in the church? And Adrian Marie, or anyone, mm-hmm. how have you seen it change as a member of the community?
Well, I'll go first. And the community has changed because there was a real stricture against gay and lesbian people years ago, and some of that still exists, but there's more of a welcoming presence in some parish communities, not just Catholic, but in other church communities throughout the Baltimore area. There's a number of Methodist churches and Episcopal churches and Presbyterian churches that are very open to the gay and lesbian community. And more on a public way, not so much privately, a pastor saying, by the way, you're welcome here. So it's become more of a public welcoming of gay and of the gay and lesbian community, and that's been a big shift over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adrian Marie?
I mean, I think definitely the when Pope Francis became the Pope, it made a big difference as far as the tone of mm-hmm. the institutional church, which has a huge impact globally. I mean, I think that's the thing that we have to remember, right, is that the global Catholic Church touches so many countries, you know, and countries that are in different places socially in regards to human rights and in regards to LGBTQ people. So, for example, I believe it was 2013 or 2014, like The Advocate, the gay magazine, made Pope Francis, like, you know, man of the year, person of the year for them.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people in the gay community, like, it ruffled their feathers. They were kind of upset that, you know, just because the Pope said, you know, who am I to judge, he was then on the cover of, you know, The Advocate. But, you know, there's such a huge impact to the Pope saying that. I mean, in our country, it may make a huge difference in our country, but you have to remember, like in countries like my own, like Dominican Republic, for the Pope to say, you know, in a mostly Catholic country, for the Pope to say, who am I to judge, might be the difference of somebody being killed or beat up, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's a matter of survival in many countries. And so I think that there's been a big shift in the tone of the institutional church, which I think lends itself to, for communities to then, you know, for the small C church, as we call it, for the people to be able to claim their space in the church and, you know, live their lives authentically and begin coming out of the closet and, you know, in the church. Because, like, that's the other piece too, is there are so many people in the church, you know, that are, you know, are filling various roles or keeping things running who are gay, you know, who are lesbian, mm-hmm. who are trans, who are queer, or bisexual. So I think that there's been a big shift. I mean, I think there's a long way to go still. But, you know, progress.
That's what Marie is saying is important for us at St. Matthew, because we have people in our church from 45 different countries.
Wow.
So we have a big immigrant mix of people from across the world that come here who've made their home in Baltimore, and it's really important that we address this because of the great mix of people that we have here in this in our parish.
Something you said, Marie, that I want to piggyback on is we did a show years ago with a gentleman who was talking about the gay and lesbian community in Jamaica and some of the things that he's dealt with. He was saying that you can be killed in Jamaica for being mm-hmm. gay. So, I mean, for those of you who want to listen to that show, you can check out the archives of the show. But there's another aspect that we haven't quite touched on yet is there are people in your church, I would assume, because it's just a microcosm of larger society, that are not okay with LEAD. Is that correct? Or not okay with the gay and lesbian lifestyle or the LGBTQ community? How do you, well, first verify that. Is that true? And if it is, what's that interaction like?
Yeah, there are some people, and there have been, I'll say a handful of people who have talked to me, and some of them have gone to another parish because they felt uncomfortable about a church welcoming gay and lesbian people in an open way, and they've gone to another parish. But when they've left, I've said to them, are you going to another parish because you think there's no gay and lesbian people there either?
Wow.
Or do you just think you're going there because they're not as you're not as publicly aware? So some have left the church and gone to another Catholic parish because they haven't liked what we've done, which is fine. People are free to go where they want, depending on the parish they want to be connected to. Yeah, but there has been some contention with that. It hasn't been a big public outcry, but it has. Most of the time, people would either come and talk to me, or they would just leave, and then I would have to track them down to find out where they are and have a conversation about that.
You know, Father Joe.
Yes.
I had a brief conversation with Adrian and Marie last night, and one of the things that came up in conversation was this whole idea of homosexuality in nature. And in one of the brief videos you sent us, you make a comment about the birds and the trees, and you say there are... there are oriole birds and there are ravens birds, there are gay birds, and like the tree is to hold all birds. And there was some allusion to this fact, to the fact that there is homosexuality in nature. Can you give us some background on where you were going in that particular homily?
Yes, yes. Well, my deep scientific background.
Come on.
I mean, I was just... alluding to the fact, I mean, I wasn't saying that based on any scientific evidence or whatever. I was just alluding to the fact that in nature, there is homosexuality of all levels. I mean, I can't quote studies and percentages and all that, but just my own basic knowledge of the world and of life. And I was just using that in the homily to kind of bring that message home to people that, you know, all... people are welcomed all the birds are welcomed into the tree, and all the people are welcomed into the church.
No matter what their condition
or circumstance may be, yeah.
Okay.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're joined by Father Joe Muth of St. Matthew Catholic Church in Baltimore. His parish has a gay and lesbian outreach known as LEAD. It provides a community of marginalized people that can support one another and discuss their relationship with the church. We also have two of Father Joe's parishioners. They're same-sex newlyweds, Adrian and Maria. And then we have the stylist to the stars, Mize Jefferson, who's a gay man, and the restaurateur and event and party planner extraordinaire, CJ Jones. And we're discussing issues related to the LGBTQ community. Father Joe, would you please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you?
Yes, you can find me at the St. Matthews in Baltimore. Would you like my address? Or
sure, whatever you'd like to give.
The address is Lockraven Boulevard, 5401 Lockraven Boulevard, Baltimore, Maryland. The church phone is 410-433-2300. And you're welcome to call or come by and visit. We have church services on the weekend at 8:45 and 11 on Sunday. And you're welcome to come by and visit and see what's going on.
And Mize,
we have a pretty lively experience, yeah. And you're welcome to be a part of it.
Nice. Mize, what are you up to?
Actually, right now we are in Essence, so we have an activation at Essence Weekend. So if anybody is down here, stop by our booth, Washington Carson booth, and say what's up. Get some product and some consultations.
Oh, consultations.
One of the things that rolls right into my next question, and you are knee-deep into the
beauty.
Entertainment and beauty, yeah, I guess the
fashion.
More so the fashion community. How is it is to someone like myself? I'm heterosexual, married. I watch TV once in a while, but there's so much. When I see someone getting their hair done, it appears that person is, if it's a male, it is often someone who seems to identify, I don't even know how to say this right, it's someone who identifies
with the
gay community or with the LGBTQ community. Please talk about that coexistence, your experience there, anything you want to say, because I need education.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I agree with you to a point. When I was a stylist in the salon, a lot of the other men that were in the salon or that I knew that did hair were gay males.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a percentage. Part
give it a loose percentage. We're not holding you to it. But
yeah.
80 for 30? 100?
I would say a good 50-50.
Okay.
50-50?
Or 60-40.
60-40 on the which side?
60 gay, 40 straight.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I do know a lot of hairdressers that are straight.
Okay.
Straight
okay.
males.
Okay.
But the thing that I found interesting when I started doing education and kind of took my career to a higher level, I was one of the minorities as far as homosexual males.
Oh, really?
Wow.
So when you decided to up your game, you feel like it changed the landscape? The landscape changed?
Yes.
Really?
It did. Mm. Yeah. And obviously, I'm speaking just for, you know, my career path, but mm-hmm. I was on a team of stylists, and there was, I would say, 15 to 20 guys out of maybe 100 people that were on the team nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of only two that were openly gay. Now, if someone was closeted, then, you know, I don't know. But out of openly gay, there was only two of us.
You got any wow. speculation on how many might have been closeted?
Ms. A.
We're looking for some stats.
I'm not going to touch that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I mean, it's
you.
A real.
Thank you.
It's real.
It's real.
A real
yes.
component of the conversation. And I got to. There's a question that I. Or there's a issue that I hear people talk about all the time. And it's what is up with the very feminine aspect of being a gay male. So you have, there seems to be different segments of being a gay male. You have men who have, well,
but there's a polarity. There's an extreme.
Yeah.
There are
yeah,
men
yeah.
that you would never dream were homosexual,
right.
and then there are men that they...
Very feminine and
yes.
almost what some call flaming.
They accentuate the fun.
Right.
Feminine,
yes.
yes.
And then you have men who have sex with men. And they don't consider themselves gay. So please help me out.
Okay.
What you got?
So, I'll speak for myself.
Now, Kenji right. is looking at me like, what?
But I think when you're growing up gay, you don't have a lot of visibility to role models, at least not in my time. In this day and age, you have a lot more, which is great. But in my time, only gays you saw on TV or in the news were the very effeminate men.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
In the movies?
In Rock Hudson?
In the movies.
No. Rock Hudson? He
well,
was a
no,
man. He was a man
were
man.
Openly gay.
He didn't say openly.
Right,
he
yeah,
said gay.
Were openly,
the
okay,
only
yeah.
gay
openly,
men.
Okay.
But see, there's a difference.
Right.
Openly gay and
true.
Gay.
Openly gay.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So I think sometimes people leaned towards being more feminine just because they think that when you're gay or when you come out as gay, you have to fall into a category.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I've always felt that, you know, you have to be true to yourself. And I never wanted to dress up in drag, not that there's anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And I just was neverly overly feminine. And a lot of coworkers for years didn't know I was gay
mm-hmm.
Until, you know, I would say something. So I just think it's how you feel. And sometimes it is your surroundings and what you see. You kind of gravitate towards one side or the other. Now, for the DL guys, I just think that is, they're just not ready to come out, or they're afraid of what society is going to say. So I have a hard time with that, just because I feel like once I came out to my family and their friends accepted me, then, you know, I felt so good inside that I can't be around those type of people. Like, there's nothing against them, and I'm not one of those people that would ever out anybody. But if mm-hmm. you're closeted, that's fine. But I feel it's negativity because you have to be true to yourself. And if you're right. not living your true self, then how can you ever truly be happy?
In your professional life, now I know you say where you are now, you're one of just two openly gay men. Talk to us like about the challenges and the victories of your life as a gay man.
I have been fortunate, and I would say the challenges were just more school. Bullying and people calling names and things like that when I was not, I didn't consider myself gay then, so yeah. them seeing it really bothered me.
It was hurtful. Yeah.
And then because I was having that internal struggle as well. So I would say that was the hardest part. But with that being said, it was no ways near what the gay youth are going through today.
Wow.
You know, nothing like that. You know, I my heart goes out to the youth of today because I don't know if I could deal with some of the things that they deal with, considering now we have social media. And all of that, I feel like that adds a big element, you know, to it.
Okay.
So that would probably be my most negative. My most positive is my family and friends. Like, I come from a big family. I have 7 brothers, all of which were very accepting. And all of my best friends are straight. So they were very accepting. And my family, I always tell my family, like, sometimes I wish you were one of those families that I came out and then we never discussed it because my family is overly involved in and who I'm dating. Before my wedding, my mother said, so, have we started talking to adoption agencies? And I was like, can we get the wedding out the way?
She wants grandchildren.
Wow, that's right.
Nice.
Yeah, well, she's got 7 other boys, so she's grandchildren.
Nice.
So I would say that's my biggest success, is just maintaining a relationship with my family and friends and not having to hide who I am. You know, they're all very involved in my life, and, you know, that has helped me and not make me feel like I have to hide who I am, or when I'm around my family, I can't talk about who I'm dating or, you know, what's going on in my life. You know, they've always been very involved. Mm-hmm. Career-wise, I really, if it has ever hindered my career, I don't know. Like, I've never felt at work ostracized or criticized behind my back or anything like that. Everybody's been pretty... You know, it's been pretty well received, and I feel like the people that didn't receive it well kept it to themselves.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Got it. That's fabulous.
I know you got to jump off the line, so thanks for joining us, Mize.
Oh, thanks for having
yes.
me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Day. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the event.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Marie and Adrian, how long had you guys been together before the marriage equality legislation was passed?
So we've been together, oh my gosh, I need to know these things, don't I?
no, you don't. No,
I'm somebody like did you, their homework.
Yeah, I'm like you. I don't know what how long I was.
I don't count backwards very well. I got to work on that. Yeah, it's like 3.5 years now.
Okay.
And so we, you know, we came around right when these things were starting to peak
mm-hmm.
in a way. But I will say, you know, so we were, you know, able to get legally married in the state of Maryland, thanks to a lot of folks who did a lot of hard work on the front lines here on that piece. But, you know, I just want to say something real quick. You know, we're on the radio, and we were talking about, you know, our friend there in New Orleans. And, you know, we don't look like Rosie O'Donnell or Ellen, you know, like, there are these iconic, like, lesbians out there, but, like, you know, there's a lot of images of what everybody looks like, you know, mm-hmm. you just don't know. And, you know, the other thing I think about is, like, Michael Sam coming out as an athlete,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what that's going to mean for young guys coming up
mm-hmm.
As athletes and being gay and finally having a voice out there that sounds like theirs and that they can relate to. I don't want to go back there, but I just think about those images that we've been fed into our heads of what gay and lesbian people look like, what they sound like, what they act like. Well, you just never know who you're coming across or what they're living. I don't know, just treat everybody with respect if we can.
Absolutely.
When we talk about LEAD here at the parish, we really talk about the fact that we're saving lives. Young people that struggle with their sexuality, their sexual identity, sometimes the suicide rate is pretty high, and we try to provide an opportunity for people to at least be able to talk and talk through what they're going through. Mm-hmm. So we see ourselves as sometimes saving lives, not just having a parish group to kind of help people get along with each other.
Nice.
Yeah, so I just, Mazay shared about his family being a big anchor of support. I wanted to ask Marie and Adrian, how does your family, you know, show support in your relationship?
If they do.
Our families have been incredibly supportive, actually. They were, I mean, a crucial part of our wedding. It's so important to us that they were there. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, so a lot of my family's still in the Dominican Republic, and so we weren't sure how many of them were going to show up, just because it's a long trek from there to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we made sure they knew they were invited, but we also made sure that they knew that they weren't expected to come. And I mean, a little bit too, also, you know, I knew it would be, although they supported us and they love us, I think it's also culturally difficult, right? Mm-hmm. But oh my gosh, we thought we were going to have like between 120 to 130 people at our wedding, and we ended up with 166, which is crazy.
Wow.
And so much of my family came up, and even my grandmother, who I have a very special relationship with, who I think is still reconciling the fact that I'm gay, mm-hmm. She made it, you know, she came, even though she didn't totally agree with it. She loves me, and she loves Adrian, and it was important for her to be there. So we've been very lucky, I would say. I mean, not without struggles, yeah. But definitely right. Very lucky.
Well, the other thing, we were just saying, we'll invite people, and if they want to come, they're welcome to, and if they don't want to come, that's all right. You know, we can't decide what's in their heart. We can just decide what's in ours and open it up as best we can.
Nice.
You
guys may remember at the beginning of the year, we did a show with Master Yao and Yamache on Tantra.
Sure.
You can check out the show in our archives. Well, he's got a full weekend of Tantra workshops coming up in the D.C. area during the weekend of July 22nd, and you're invited to join him. For more information, visit Master Yao, that's Yao57. eventbrite.com. That's Master Master Yao Yao57 eventbrite.com. I'll also post the link on the show on franklove.com. This is Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who like me are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you that love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help you be a better parent and partner. You can find this in our archive shows. There are well over 100 at franklove.com, on Blog Talk, iTunes, and Stitcher. And once again, Miko's here to give us some financial wisdom. Take it away, Miko.
In our society, folks who are making it rain, those engaging in excessive spending, are highly favored and publicized. Many people are drawn to them and consider them desirable. However, there's another group of people who are amazingly sexy. They are the financial intelligent. So why are financially intelligent people so sexy? Here are three reasons. 1. They understand that their self-worth is not connected to their net worth. Financial intelligent people know they are fabulously unique and are valuable no matter what they earn. They are confident about the inherent talents and know that what they have to offer is priceless. 2. They determine what success looks like for themselves. They are clear on the life they want, their financial goals, and priorities. They don't let friends or family or society determine what success is for them. Instead, they design and implement their own personalized image of success. They are truly comfortable in their own skin. And finally, 3. They understand that love is the most valuable currency. They choose friends based on their character, not their titles or status in society. They value relationships more than money. If you are struggling with finding your financial sexiness, Miko's Money Matters is here to help. Call me at 202-695-2404. And remember that it's never too late to rescue your financial future.
Thanks, Miko. It's important that we pay respects, at least in my eyes, it's important that we pay respects to the folks who are affected by the recent shooting at the Pulse nightclub. And so I want to just open the floor and have, is there anything anyone would like to say? Because 50 people were killed?
49.
49 people were killed. That's such an impact. I mean, that's huge. When I found out about the story, I thought it, someone said to me 15 people. I thought I heard 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, no, 50.
Right.
And yeah. I said, what? Yeah. I mean, that's, the number is just, I mean, one is plenty. Two, wow, 15, 50?
Right.
So
absurd.
Please.
Terrible, terrible tragedy. I was sharing with Nancy just last night that what I do in the community is I provide a safe haven for LGBT community, specifically more lesbian women. So when the community comes to my events, they know they're going to be safe. And the issue is that gay people, we just don't have a lot of places to go where we can fellowship, congregate, have fun, network. So the place that's most common for that over the years has been the nightclubs, the bars, the special parties that we have, because within those walls, you can be your true self.
Mm.
Now, other people, we can do that at other places. I try to live the most authentic life that I can, whether I'm at church, whether I'm at an event, whether I'm working at my own bar. So the tragedy is, that could have been at my event.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been at my party. And so many of us identify with that, and we were so hurt because we've been in those situations for a lot of our lives. It was more so a violation. And to know that someone can come inside your place of peace, your place of comfort, and just wreck that ideology is just scary. And that's why it resonated all over the world, with not just the LGBT community, but I'm sure the straight community also. There were some people that had plenty of compassion and could understand the ramifications of that act. It's just a tragedy, but we've decided in Atlanta that we won't live in fear, and we will continue on with our Pride celebrations. Of course, we the city of Atlanta has, and the mayor and the chief of police have agreed to beef up security. Met with the mayor so that just in case there's an idiot out there thinking that he can do something like that in Atlanta, that at least we may be a little bit more prepared. Not saying that they weren't in Atlanta, but that's not something that we would think would happen when we go
right,
out.
So right,
to prepare
right,
for right. something like that is saying that we are not safe in our right. safe havens, in our events. So it's a catch-22. You want to be safe, but you don't want to be safe because people are bombing and shooting and disrupting your place of
your lifestyle, everything.
Your place of your lifestyle, mm-hmm. exactly. So it's just terrible. Hopefully it will, had it opened the eyes of people who didn't even consider the fact that there are issues mm-hmm. Like that every day. People just don't go around shooting guns, but they say things out of their mouths, their mm-hmm. ideologies. The things they preach are against us, the hate. I was telling Nancy also that a common fear is leaving the club.
Right.
Not necessarily in the club, but walking home to your car,
yes.
walking to the train. There are several incidents where LGBT individuals are harassed. I have a bar. I have a young lesbian. She's 18 years old. Mm-hmm. She just cleans up for me. She does hookahs.
she was harassed walking home. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't even have a gay club. This, mm-hmm. this is a regular bar by some street thugs walking home from work. And it's just a shame that someone would have to worry about that because of their sexuality. And they just assumed she was because she was more not as feminine as, mm-hmm. as someone. But it just saddens me that I feel responsible for her and she was jumped on the way home from work at my restaurant. So it is a fear, it is a concern, but we can't live in fear. We have to try to go on as best we know how so that other people watching, you know, that they can't just bomb us and shoot us and think that we're just not going to be in existence and not go on as we were before.
Right.
So it's important to remember those victims, mm-hmm. that their lives are not in vain. They have started that action has started conversation. Politicians have to, mm-hmm. talk about it. Ministers and preachers have to talk about it. I mean, if you don't, you're not being sensitive. So my pastor says that something good is going to come out of that tragedy. Things happen that are tragic. However, how we handle them, I just don't want those individuals, those 49 individuals' lives to be in vain. It's a great way to spark conversation because of those tragedies.
Okay, the thing I like about what you said is that those people need to be remembered. And just last night, Father Joe's parish did a candlelight vigil. You want to tell us a little bit about how it went?
Yeah, we had a great vigil, probably over 200 people last night. There were Muslims, Jews, Christians, gay people, lesbian people, a whole mix of the Baltimore community came together in a silent candlelight prayer vigil to remember folks that were killed in Orlando. One of the things about that is at a clergy gathering I was at last week, a Baptist minister said, isn't it kind of a shame that gay and lesbian people felt more comfortable in a bar than they did in a church? They felt safer in a bar than they did in a church.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is kind of an indictment of the church that has to be more welcoming to people to say, no, you can feel safe here.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to create churches that are safe places for gay and lesbian people, too. And that's part of the reason that we have LEAD and part of the reason that we're trying to develop this outreach. But, yeah, last night we had a great conversation and silent prayer vigil to honor those who were killed and to remember them in a special way so that what's just being said, we can move into a more positive relational approach to the gay and lesbian community in a welcoming spirit.
Now, God, I mean, Jeff just raised the issue. I gotta touch on it because when you guys were talking about the safe place in the nightclubs, I was thinking to myself, wow, because if I go to a nightclub, I don't feel safe. The individuals in that community feel they got something I don't have. And that's great. Now, ironically, when someone like myself, and I don't really go to the clubs, but a heterosexual like myself may go to a club, if there's a shooting, it's probably by another heterosexual. Now, at this club, where there was a shooting of 50 people who presumably were gay or lesbian, they were shot by someone who was gay.
Okay. But not openly gay.
Well,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. I mean, he struggled.
Okay.
So, that's why he went up in there. He struggled with his own probably.
So you have some of the same dynamic in the heterosexual community of violence within that community spilling over into the gay community. That's interesting.
But there's a difference between random violence of somebody shooting somebody and targeted violence of somebody targeting a particular
community
because they're gay or lesbian.
Well, in the black community, it could be argued that we're shooting each other in the club because we're black. Even black people. I mean, it's there's a lot of levels to that conversation. But, you know,
well, the common theme of these, though, usually is that these people don't have anywhere to belong themselves. They got no other reason to live. They're angry. They're frustrated. And they're not being heard by somebody. So they're going to make a big bang to get heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they don't believe so much. So it's not even like a gay, I mean, you don't want to like label it all these things, but I mean, I think the core issue behind all of, a lot of these shootings is just that we aren't making spaces for enough people to feel safe, enough mm-hmm. people to belong mm-hmm. in their own community.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, so if we can give them a better reason to live, as opposed to a more high, you know, a higher reason to die, almost.
Yes,
great
point.
Yeah,
somebody would have affirmed.
Great point.
If someone would have affirmed this young man in his life, mm-hmm. he probably wouldn't have ended up doing such a heinous act. There's somewhere there was disconnect somewhere where he was not all right with who he was. Because when you attack people, generally it's an inward feeling somehow, whether it's words, guns, any type of violence. There's an inner struggle there.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And he just was not affirmed. And that is so important, to be affirmed, to be accepted, to say you are okay in your skin. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do, who you love, who you choose to have sex with. You are okay. And people are more happy causing dissension mm-hmm. than inclusion. And I think the people that do that just don't feel included. They just don't feel included. They don't feel good about themselves.
Yes, please, quickly, because I gotta wrap it up.
This is awesome, but we gotta wrap up.
Just to touch on the safe space thing, you know, I think we can't talk about the Pulse nightclub shooting without talking about that it was Latino night at the club. You know, and what that means is, so that means that people in the Latino community that were gay and lesbian and trans and bisexual who were at that nightclub, probably some of them were not even out in, you know, their own community and in their family. Mm-hmm. So I cannot emphasize, like, what a safe space that kind of club is, you know, and we know, and that's evident by the fact that some of the parents, which doesn't surprise me at all as a Latina, some of the parents were finding out that their kids had been killed while at the same time they were finding out that their kids were gay,
yeah.
You know?
Wow.
And that's, you know, and that just says so much about how far we need to come in all of our communities right. and to have these conversations and like you were saying, Nancy, and feel loved and accepted in our own skin.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been joined by Father Joe Muth of the St. Matthew Catholic Church in Baltimore. His parish has a gay and lesbian outreach group known as LEAD, and it provides a community of marginalized people that can support one another and discuss their relationship with the church. Father Muth, can you give us that phone number one more time?
It's 410-433-2300.
Thanks for joining us. I know you got to go.
Yep, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You sure. Bet. We also have got two of Father Joe's parishioners. They're same-sex newlyweds, Adrian and Marie. Adrian and Marie, thanks for joining us. We had the stylist to the stars, Ms. A. Jefferson, and the restaurateur and event and party planner extraordinaire, C.J. Jones. Along today's journey, we've discussed the Pulse nightclub, the many faces of the LGBTQ community, and the Catholic Church. Thank you to my guest co-host, Nakenji.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you to my co-host, Nancy.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my great guest, Father Joe Muth, his parishioners, Adrian and Marie, Ms. A. Jefferson, and C.J. Jones. You've been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had and learned as much as I have hanging out with today's all-star ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there. And if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.